So I guess the first question to ask is, when was the last time any of us was at a beach?
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For Masochist and Other Deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 152, we're discussing the concept of the beach read.
Oh, sand in the pages, or in your Kindle.
Or your completely ruined, waterlogged book.
Oh, yeah.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian in British Columbia, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi, Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa band of Paiutes.
And my name is Megan. I am an archivist, and I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
Announcements. I'm very tired.
Is that really an announcement?
We're all very tired. That's the announcement.
Yes.
I can talk about our book list.
Yeah, please do, RJ.
We have in this episode, as with all of our episodes the last few years, a book list in the show notes of books by BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors. For the genres that we're covering in the episodes and for these non-genre episodes, ow, sorry, I'm fighting a cat while I'm trying to say this. No, get out of here. For the genres that we're covering in each episode, and for these non-genre episodes, for retroactive genres we have covered in the past. So in the show notes of this episode and on our website, bookclub4m.com, you are not going to find beach reads by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors. You are going to find Westerns by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors, which, I mean, maybe that's your preferred beach reading.
True.
If so, you can find those in the show notes and on bookclubfram.com. Check them out.
I guess I'd probably describe Western as like kind of the sandiest genre, like dustiest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I guess the first question to ask is, when was the last time any of us was at a beach?
Oh, that was not the first question I expected.
I can tell you to the day. It was, I believe, May 31st. So like 2 weeks ago.
Nice. I think I was at the beach before the pandemic.
Mm.
Were you on vacation, RJ?
Yes. So that was when I was on vacation. I went home to Rhode Island, where I'm originally from, and we walked up and down Scarborough Beach. It was a very cloudy, windy day. There was, like, nobody there. It was my ideal beach experience. I did not swim. I did not sit down. I just walked up and down the beach, got my feet wet, looked at some cool rocks.
Nice.
Did you read anything?
I did not.
Okay.
Matthew, do you know when we were last at a beach?
Oh, I was at the place with the barge in Vancouver.
Oh, yes.
I feel like that's barely a beach.
They had a sign. It said Barge Chilling Beach.
Yeah, it does. It's in the title. Yeah.
I didn't see the sign, but I was there. So that was December. So I guess I feel that counts.
I have no clue whatsoever.
Oh, my gosh. Other than that, well, pre-COVID.
Yeah, for sure. No idea.
Maybe in Scotland?
Yeah, I was wondering that too. Is it possible we went to a beach at some point in Scotland?
Yeah, maybe my parents brought us to a beach in Edinburgh.
We went to a wharf situation thing at one point, but like a beach?
Who knows? Also, yeah, okay. And also, I guess it depends on what is your definition of a beach? What does it need?
Yeah, okay, let's that we're too zoomed out right now. Let's zoom in towards the beach read. What is a beach read?
We'll just add one word to that. Like, what is a beach read as opposed to what is a beach?
Yeah. We should, handle that first before we define what a beach is.
Hey, I got this. We got this one. It's a book that you would read while at the beach.
Have any of you ever read a book at the beach?
Oh, yeah.
Conceivably? I don't know. I haven't been to beach. Like, okay, I have been to beaches plenty of times, but not in a very, 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 very long time. And I don't really remember, and who knows.
Have you seen how pale I am? I don't, lie out in the sun.
You could be under a parasol. Mm-hmm. Come on.
In one of those old-timey...
Old-timey bathing suits.
Yes, I was going to say old-timey, full-body, stripey, black and white bathing suits. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
RJ, I'm glad that's what you think of, what I would look like if I went to the beach. Oh, obviously Matthew's going to wear an old-timey bathing suit if he goes to the beach.
Yeah. Matthew, you don't really like water, so...
I was actually just at a presentation today about kids being afraid of swimming and water and drowning. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can't swim. Water does kind of scare me.
Yeah.
I like it being there. I like being close to it, but I don't want to go into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am also not a regular beach goer, so I can't remember the last time I read something at the beach. But I know my partner's mother, who we were staying with when I was in Rhode Island, is a big beach person and a big beach reader. I feel like she does probably a big chunk of her reading at the beach.
Oh, right. Also, it's summertime now. That's when people are supposed to do this. Mm. Read at the beach. That's why we're doing this episode now.
Right.
It's seasonal.
We used to go camping every summer at a lake. So there was a beach and we did a lot of reading because we did a lot of reading.
It was unrelated. It just happened to occur there because that's where you were located.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing a little reading and Book Riot linked to a Guardian article where they talked about how the term beach read only really came about in the 90s. And it was basically a publishing term that was like, these are the summer bestsellers that you can read at the beach. And that made a lot more sense.
Yeah, I totally assumed this was a marketing terminology. Because the interesting thing about beach read is it is not a genre. It is a situation that encompasses a lot of different genres that could all match into that situation. So that's why we're not doing this as a genre episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think there's genres that aren't included, though.
Sure.
I mean,
I will say that maybe last year, the year before, when we were doing sort of book bundles at the library branch I was working at during right after we had reopened. So a lot of people still not spending a lot of time in the library. And we put together these book bundles for people who just wanted to grab a bag of books on a theme and go. And I don't know who it was, but I had a coworker who put together a bag of beach read books, and three of them were fine. They were breezy romances or mysteries or whatever it was. And one of them was a book titled Mostly Dead Things.
Yes.
That sounds like a beach read for Anna.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, which, I mean, the first line of the plot summary. One morning, Jessalyn Morton walks into the family taxidermy shop to find that her father has committed suicide right there on one of the metal tables.
Oh, no.
I thought this was going to be about, the Mary Roach book Stiff.
No, this is a book about grief and taxidermy, and I think also there's some sex stuff in it. It's, very, it is a very, if it's humorous, it's a very, very darkly humorous book. And I have no idea how it made it into a beach read bag. But yeah, this is one I would not consider a beach read. I think the only reason it got in is because there is a flamingo on the cover.
Honestly, if it were a nonfiction about a woman who used taxidermy that her to deal with her grief over her father's suicide, I would probably read that as a beach read.
That sounds like a book that you could read right now for our genre that we're covering for next episode, humor nonfiction. Like
potentially, depending on how it was written, yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, and I think I've spoken about this on the podcast before, that my partner's family, when they go to the cottage, which I feel like is the equivalent of beach time, they mostly read murder books. And so I think perhaps the taxidermy book would fit into that. Because my partner's mother is like, more gruesome murder is better.
Yeah, I can understand that to a degree because my mother actually also, like, beaches are like her favorite sort of like getting away travel thing to do. Because they live in a very landlocked place. There's not a beach around.
And cold.
So, like, she really enjoys going out to beaches, and she's always enjoyed beaches and swimming and all that. And she loves snorkeling and all that kind of stuff. But she definitely, like, she's a beach read person. But for her, like, the thing she reads is murder mysteries. So, like, pretty much guaranteed she's reading about death on the beach. Maybe death while yeah, I'm not sure how to phrase that properly.
Yeah. I just think it is such a risk if you are pairing it with these very light romances and things. Such a risk to be like, here, stranger.
Yeah, totally.
Read this on the beach.
Well, you'll be happy to know that Death on the Beach is the name of a 2020 police procedural mystery.
What?
Sure, of course.
Oh, you could probably have an entire series of like cozy mysteries that all have beach-related puns.
Oh, no.
Those exist. I'm like 100% certain, positive those exist.
And there's a book that came out in 2020 that's actually called Beach Read. And I think the author did another one that was like vacation reading or something. So there's a whole theme to be exploited.
So do you think the concept of what counts for a beach read has changed or evolved or anything like that since like its conception in the 90s to now? Like, do we think about a beach read in any different way? Is the concept as popular? Like, how do you think that's changed over time if you were thinking about that? Given, you know, we probably were not really thinking about the concept of beach reads back in the 90s.
Here's my related question is, how gendered do you think this term is?
Oh, very gendered.
Yeah, it feels very gendered.
Although I guess we could say that about anything, couldn't we?
How gendered do you think something in society is? Pretty gendered. Yeah, I feel like when I was trying to look up definitions for beach reads, I feel like it is mostly applied to, genres associated with women. So like romances and domestic thrillers and cozy mysteries we mentioned. And yes, more. I think one even said just like women's fiction, which, you know, is a whole other bag of worms. Can of worms? Yes. It's a bag of worms. That's what you're taking to the beach. You're going fishing. Yeah. I think it's pretty gendered.
I think it might be like fairly gendered and racialized as well, like race specific, because it's definitely a genre that I think of white audiences in relation to. I picture white middle-aged women sitting on a beach relaxing, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, first you need a vacation.
Right. So there's some class things in there potentially too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who can afford to do this?
Yep. There's a whole pile of different things in this, which is why it's like one of those like marketing, like you can just picture them having an audience persona profile like for this and matching books up to that and which ones they're going to market to meet that profile.
Yeah.
I guess the more generic term is just summer read.
When I think of summer reading, I think of how excited I was as a kid to have all that unstructured time to do reading rather than the type of reading people do on vacation.
Yeah, I can understand that. It also makes me think of like summer reading assignments from when, you know, high school, and they're like, by the time you get back, you have to have read this, and everybody reads it the week before if they read it.
Unless you are Megan.
I don't think I ever got like a required reading list. I was very disappointed as a child.
Oh.
There was no required reading. The other thing I was thinking of is the type of genres that get collected as beach reads could also be thought of as escapist or like not too thinky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which is kind of funny to me because the kind of thing that I pick up in order to not think very much about, you know, the world or personal troubles or whatever are very different than the kind of light fiction or even the thrillers and murder mysteries that we see talked about. So it's very general, the idea of a beach read, and so very not clear, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think about how often, like, what is on the like the New York Times bestseller list doesn't necessarily match with what I particularly am most drawn to read myself. And I think it is a little more aligned to an audience that would be similar for the beach read a lot of the times, not always. So like it, some of the struggles to understand or connect with the beach read concept is just because we may not necessarily be the audience for it here, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have particular genres you think of as your escapist genres?
Megan, we've established that RJ doesn't have time to read, that I only read comics.
I mean, I feel like comics is kind of the thing that I read when I'm not reading for the show. Yeah, like middle grade comics specifically. If you peep my Goodreads, you'll find the things that I read that are not for the show tend to be middle grade graphic novels.
And Anna and I read nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I was going to say, I have a stack of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 nonfiction books that are pulled out and sitting on my table right now because I'm about to leave on vacation to go see my parents. And during that time, I'm planning on mostly reading a whole bunch of things, and I have to decide which of these 12 I can actually fit in my bag to take with me, because I clearly can't take 12 of them. But this is my small set. This is my, like, I've limited down my options to these 12.
This is the Anna Ferry challenge, to go away on vacation and come back with fewer books than you left with.
Oh, heck, that never happens. I never come back with less than I started.
That's because you ship them.
Yeah. That's possible. I don't think I've really done that except for when I go on like to ALA or BEA or something like that.
No, Anna, last summer when we were in Alaska, we shipped a box of books.
That's true. We did, actually. We did. But hey, I was there for like multiple months, so it's bound to happen at some point. You leave me someplace long enough, there will just be more books than there were at the beginning.
Have we exhausted beach reads?
I think we've exhausted trying to define what a beach read is. It's a marketing term that encompasses a few different genres. And we have a little game to play.
Yeah, so we decided that we were going to challenge ourselves and challenge each other by taking a specific type of beach read. We each selected one type, and we would find two real blurbs from real books that match that genre, and we would write up one fake one, and we would read them off to each other, and we have to pick the fake out of the three options.
And you can play along at home and tell us how you did. You can tell us that you got them all right as well, because we won't know any better.
So this is very similar to sort of Two Truths and a Lie, or if you are a fan of the My Brother and Me podcast, That's a Christmas to Me, where they read two fake Hallmark Christmas movies and – or one fake Hallmark Christmas movie and two
– Did you see that there was a call for articles about like – academic articles about Hallmark Christmas movies?
I didn't.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's exciting.
Link in the show notes if you're the sort of person that watches those and wants to write about them.
Yep.
Which I feel like there's probably someone listening to our podcast who's like, whoa, tell me more.
All right, so who wants to go first?
Nobody.
I can go first. I can start us off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, speaking of rom-coms, I chose contemporary romance as my beach read genre. And let's get into it. So I'm not going to read authors because that might be too much of a hint. If you know that two of the authors are real, and one is fake. So just titles and short blurbs. So first title, Just Haven't Met You Yet. Laura's business trip to the Channel Islands isn't exactly off to a great start. After unceremoniously dumping everything in her bag in front of the most attractive man she's ever seen in real life, she arrives at her hotel only to realize she's grabbed the wrong suitcase from the airport. Her only consolation? The irresistibly appealing contents of the case. A copy of her favorite book, piano music, and a rugged, heavy-knit fisherman sweater only a Ryan Gosling lookalike could pull off. The owner of this suitcase is Laura's dream man. She's sure of it. Now, all she has to do is find him.
I really hope it's queer. It's like, oh, it wasn't a man after all.
That one's Just Haven't Met You Yet. So number two, next title is Head Over Feet. Danica Morrison is determined to turn her life around. After her ex-fiancé called it quits in the middle of penning invitations for her dream wedding, absolutely everything needed to change. So she quit her job, moved to New City, and even ditched her lifelong nickname. No more naive doormat Danny. The new tough Danica is flipping houses with her sister in Indianapolis, hitting the gym, and embracing her newfound independence. But when a hottie on rollerblades nearly crashes into her, sending sparks flying, and then turns out to be the real estate agent that her sister's been butting heads with for months, Danica suddenly isn't so sure of herself. This new guy could threaten her new life, and she's not ready to get hurt again. Danica has no choice but to do what her real, fierce, authentic self would do. She just has to figure out who that is first. So that's Head Over Feet. And so that's number two. Number three is Call Me Maybe. What happens when you meet your teenage heartthrob when you're both all grown up? When Cassie was 15, all she wanted was to marry Jesse Franklin, the bassist from her favorite band, Franco. Now she's single, in her late 20s, and wondering what happened to that teenage dream. A chance encounter on Facebook soon leads to a transatlantic hookup, and soon Jesse and Cassie are having a long-distance love affair spanning 5,000 miles. Cassie's on cloud nine, until she hears something that makes her think that Jesse might not be all that he seems. They say you should never meet your heroes, but what happens when you fall in love with them?
Dang.
Number three, based solely on the title.
Yeah.
I was going to say number one. I forget why. The other one sounded too real.
Yeah, my debate is between one and three, actually, which is funny. So I guess I'm weirdly the tiebreaker here. I'm going to go with one.
Okay, so we have one vote for number three, Call Me Maybe. Two votes for number one, Just Haven't Met You Yet.
Yep. Oh, we're all wrong, aren't we?
The fake title that I made up was number two, Head Over
Feet. Perfect. Yeah.
I'm so pleased. I was rereading it today and I was like, oh, they're going to get it. But no. I fooled you.
If I think I was going to go for that one, but the third one's title.
Call Me Maybe.
I was like, no.
Well, here's something that none of you noticed is that the title of all three of these are taken from song titles of Canadian singer-songwriters. So, Call Me Maybe, Carly Rae, Head Over Feet is an Alanis Morissette song, and Just Haven't Met You Yet is a Michael Bublé song.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So, I saw the title Just Haven't Met You Yet, and I was like, oh, I can build a theme.
Good job. Wow.
You have a theme? Wow, you had a theme inside a theme. Good job.
I would have made a Call Me Maybe if one didn't already exist, but of course.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yep.
One already existed.
So I decided to go with what I consider beach reads. So these are all endurance sports nonfiction books.
Megan, I adore you so much.
So title number one is called The Pain Cave, Pushing the Limits of Human Endurance. And I removed all of the names in these ones because often it was the author's name mixed in with it because they're kind of like memoir-y types. So, from a normal middle-class life, a heroin addiction nearly loses him everything. But the right nudge redirects him to the world of ultra-endurance sports. The Pain Cave is a searing and illuminating journey from the gritty rock bottom of addiction to the heights of triumphs in the world of Ironman triathlons. With great sensitivity and candor, the author details his journey through a crucible of pain. Book number two is called Hell on Two Wheels, an astonishing story of suffering, triumph, and the most extreme endurance race in the world. This three-time Ironman finisher takes the wraps off the best-kept secret in the sports world, a bicycle race like no other. In Hell on Two Wheels, the author follows a group of athletes before, during, and after the closest and most controversial race in the event's 30-year history. This work offers a thrilling and remarkable detailed account of the competitors' triumphs and tragedies as they test themselves, each other, and the limits of human endurance. Title number three, The Pursuit of Endurance. Harnessing the record-breaking power of strength and resilience. A record holder of the fastest known time on the Appalachian Trail, the author reveals the secrets and habits behind endurance as she chronicles her incredible accomplishments in the world of endurance hiking, backpacking, and trail running. With a storyteller's ear for fascinating detail and description, she takes her readers along as she trains and sets her record, analyzing and trail testing the theories and methodologies espoused by her star-studded roster of mentors. So that's The Pain Cave, Hell on Two Wheels, and The Pursuit of Endurance.
Oh, they all sound real.
Yep.
I'm suspicious of the third one because it doesn't mention Ironman races, whereas the other two did.
I like your reasoning.
So clearly all endurance sports books are about Ironman races and there's no other type.
You know, it's funny. One of the things that I noticed in like the second one was they used the metaphor of take the wraps off. And I was like, that's not the right sport metaphor at this point. But then I realized that like in my own like reading of a bunch of different blurbs for my topic, I kept finding them using like metaphors or wording that I was like, but that doesn't match with the theme of this. So I was like, that doesn't actually reveal anything.
Yeah, I'm tempted by Hell on Two Wheels because it feels very bicycle themed, which is like where if you ask me which of these three things did Megan make up and one of them is bicycle related, I will pick the bicycle related one. But maybe it's a trap.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine if Megan had chosen three bicycle ones? We would never be able to guess.
Never.
No chance.
Yeah, hopeless.
I'm going to go number two. I'm going to go for it.
Okay.
I have no better reason, so I'm just going with number two because of that, like, the mixed metaphor thing. But I'm not convinced that that is a clue at all.
So, in fact, the one that I made up is The Pain Cave.
Ah, I was wondering.
Wow.
We're doing great.
Yeah. Or we're doing terrible, depending on which perspective.
No, great.
We're doing great at writing these.
If nothing else, we've got book pitches we can give to agents, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well done.
Well, I relied on a similar story. So the story exists kind of, but I just gave it mostly a new name and some different adjectives.
So here's my three. My genre was domestic thrillers, which I'm the podcast expert on. Number one, The Lady in Waiting, a novel. 5 years ago, Bethany Mays left her childhood home behind, driven away by her father's compulsive hoarding. But now, a message about his accidental death has pulled her back to the sleepy coastal town of New Haverhill. Sorting through the remnants of her childhood and cleaning out the years of junk that her father had collected seems to be an overwhelming task until Beth runs into her high school crush, Zach Whalen, who offers to help. Things start to go well until amongst the stacks of yellowed newspapers, piles of old clothes, and mountains of empty food containers, Beth and Zach find the body of a dead girl, and Beth realizes her father's death might not have been an accident after all. As Beth looks into her father's death and learns more about his compulsive behavior, she realizes that the man she knew as her father wasn't who she thought he was, and that the sleepy little town of New Haverhill isn't as sleepy as it once seemed.
Ooh.
Number two, Her Dark Lies, a novel. Jutting from sparkling turquoise waters off the Italian coast, Isle Isola is an idyllic setting for a wedding in the majestic clifftop villa owned by the wealthy Compton family. Up-and-coming artist Claire Hunter will marry handsome, charming Jack Compton, surrounded by close family, intimate friends, and a host of dark secrets. From the moment Claire sets foot on the island, something seems amiss. Skeletal remains have just been found. There are other, newer disturbances too. Menacing texts, a ruined wedding dress, and one troubling shadow hanging over Claire's otherwise blissful relationship. The strange mystery surrounding Jack's first wife. Then, a raging storm descends, the power goes out, and the real terror begins. Number three. The Girls Are All So Nice Here, a novel. A lot has changed in the years since Ambrosia Wellington graduated from college, and she's worked hard to create a new life for herself. But then an invitation to her 10-year reunion arrives in the mail, along with an anonymous note that reads, "We need to talk about what we did that night." It seems that the secrets of Ambrosia's past and the people she thought she'd left there aren't as buried as she'd believed. Amb can't stop fixating on what she did or who she did it with, larger-than-life Sloane Sully Sullivan, Amb's former best friend who could make anyone do anything. At the reunion, Amb and Sully receive increasingly menacing messages, and it becomes clear that they're being pursued by someone who wants more than just the truth of what happened that first semester. This person wants revenge for what they did and the damage they caused, the extent of which Amb is only now understanding, and it was all because of the game they played to get a boy who belonged to someone else and the girl who paid the price.
So, I feel like I need to abstain because I know for a fact that one of these is real.
Boo!
I don't think you have to abstain. You just get a better chance.
Well, RJ guesses last then.
I'll guess last, yeah. I did a shelf reader for one of these, so I know that it's a real one.
Feel like I've heard the title of the middle one before. And the third one sounds kind of like I Know What You Did Last Summer. I'm going to guess number three. Although I really kind of want to read number one.
I'm going to go with number one, based on just some phrasing.
RJ?
If I go with number two, then all of our bases are covered.
Yeah!
we can't strike out on all of them. But I was going to go with number one, and maybe I will hold that. I think I'm going to stick with number one.
Number one is indeed the fake one.
Hey!
Well, I want to read it, so you should definitely pitch it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I wrote one that was very generic at first. And then I was like, oh, there's no hook to this. There's nothing about this. And I'm like, oh, what can I do to make this Vike slightly more interesting? I'm like, oh, her father's a hoarder. That's what it is. And before that, it was just like, oh, yeah, he was dead and she came back and bad things. And it's just like, why would anyone read this book?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Honestly, the tip off with that one was the title, which was just very generic. Which was just the lady in waiting, which doesn't mean anything, but you know.
I kind of forgot what the title was, which I mean, maybe speaks to its genericness.
There's a reason I did not repeat them.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, that one was the most themey. Like the second one seemed a little bit too, there was too many things going on. Whereas the first one was like, had a very concentrated theme, which is like good and interesting, but also it's a tip off.
What one had you heard of?
The third one.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I have to be honest. I looked for like 2022 domestic thrillers and just took the first two that I saw. I read two descriptions before I wrote mine. So
that's great.
So honestly, that I fooled one of you is good enough.
All right. So for mine, I did travel memoirs. And I did not do a title for mine, so I'm just giving them a topic. So the topics are adventure, food, and family. And you'll have to pick whether it's adventure, food, or family. So starting with adventure. An extraordinary and inspiring chronicle of one woman's harrowing journey to become the first female to kayak the entire Amazon River. Name sold her successful outdoor adventure business, upsetting her partner and boyfriend of 12 years and getting them both fired in the process. The emotional waters that would fester and erupt on the ensuing journey was often more challenging to navigate than the mighty river itself. With blistering lips and irritated fingernails, Name would would tackle raging class 5 whitewater for 25 days straight, barely surviving a dynamite-filled canyon being prepared for a new hydroelectric plant. She and her two companions would encounter illegal loggers, narco-traffickers, murderous Shining Path rebels, and ruthless poachers in the black market trade and endangered species. So that's adventure. And by the way, I am pulling all their names. So if you hear me say name, that's just because I'm replacing names.
At first, I was like, that's an interesting name. Is this person just called name? Okay.
I know. I realized I forgot to say that before I started. Sorry. Okay. So now it's food. Married food vloggers Name and Name chronicle 3 globe-trotting years meeting the real people who make the honest foods of our daily culinary lives. Known for raw footage of stunning locales and authentic cuisine, the creators of Name of YouTube channel set out to capture the human stories behind the lived cuisines from around the world. They share homemade tacos with a grandmother in Oaxaca, Mexico, gather sandpaper figs with an urban forager from the suburban parks of Sydney, and savor the life-altering made-from-scratch larb from a street vendor in Laos. With humor and generosity, Name and Name share their food adventures, explain foreign words and ingredients, and unpack the tragic impacts of climate change on the food lives of average people from every corner of the globe. Okay, that's food. And now, family. Have kids, will travel is veteran travel journalist Name's mantra. Her intrepid spirit is infectious in this warm, engaging account of her family's adventures and misadventures. She shares the life lessons learnt on their travels, from overcoming disappointment in Thailand to saying sorry in Japan, discovering perseverance in Borneo, and learning about conversation in Malaysia. From the jungles of Southeast Asia to the waterfront in Havana and the blazing heat of Egypt, this book captures the essence of being a parent in the thick of it and learning on the hoof. Inspirational for anyone who has dreaded traveling with a baby, toddler, or teen, it is a life-affirming read for every wannabe traveler. So is it adventure, food, or family?
You know how I said I worried about my initial book description being too generic, so I changed it? Both the food and family ones, these, I believe, could have been generated by an artificial intelligence.
Thing in place.
And food in country. And it's just like, okay, why would I read this book? And I guess because I know YouTube person. I'm gonna go with number one because it's not generic.
I think I'm gonna go number. I'm gonna go number two.
I think I'm gonna go with adventure, if only because infected fingernails.
Ew. Yeah. Fair. All right. So the answer is, RJ, you're correct. It's food.
Yay!
Good stuff.
Yeah, no, that Amazon one, like, not only did it have all of that, but on top of it, it had all this stuff about, like, being an amazing feminist chronicle of something, something. And it's like, wow, there is so much going on here.
You'll all be happy to know that I scored 0 out of 3. So my ability to guess what is real and is not is questionable.
Yeah, or we're all just really good at writing these is another way to look at it.
I know. I'm like actually quite impressed with us.
We all succeeded, yeah. I will tell you, Matthew, that the other thing I think that really tipped me off between, I knew one of them was real with yours, and then the thing that tipped me off between the number one and number two, the hoarder and the turquoise, whatever it was, is the second one. As soon as it was like, it's like it's in Italy and beaches or something. And I was like, these aren't Matthew details.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first one, creepy house full of hoarder stuff. That's a Matthew detail.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I was going to make him a fishing person who died at sea. I should have done that instead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But hoarder seemed like a good hook for a book. So that's why I went with it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I also use like a random name generator to get the names of the characters. But like one of them, the third one, what was her name? This is the real one. Ambrosia Wellington. I'm like, come off it. Why would I even try to create a realistic name if this is what you're naming your characters?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the one that I made up, Danica Morrison, was I was just trying to get something that sort of kind of sounded like Alanis Morissette.
Oh, it made me think of, I feel like there is actually a book where there's a Danica in it, or a Danny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, get it together, Danny.
Oh, Danny Brown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Threw me off.
So to our listeners, let us know what you got. Were you able to guess better than we were? Is there one of them that you really, one of the books that we've made up that you would really like to read? Tell us, let us know.
Yeah, if you want to read any of the nonfiction ones, you're out of luck unless you want it as a novelized version. Like,
I guess also for RJ and my books, is there a book out there with the same plot that we just don't know about? Or I guess any of them, honestly, any of those could be real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I will say for the one I wrote, I really struggled with coming up with something that was realistic and not something that I would actually want to read.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably wouldn't mind reading this one, but I kept doing details like the line, like, a hottie on rollerblades nearly crashes into her. And I was like, this is so fucking stupid, but this is what it would say.
The rollerblades honestly made me think that one wasn't real, RJ.
Yeah, that almost got me.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking of, like, it's not modern.
Yeah.
Like, if it was, like, from the 90s, yeah, okay, definitely. But, like,
people still rollerblade.
Yeah, but you don't – it's not romance plots anymore.
Oh.
Now it's someone on their hoverboard e-scooter that would run into her.
Except for the fact that all the people in the hoverboard e-scooters are absolutely not romance book materials. Like,
this guy is a real estate agent she doesn't like.
It's true.
I think, honestly, putting him on a hoverboard makes it even better in regards to enemies to lovers.
I think he should be on one of those electric unicycle things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was really trying to, like, very thinly work in a theme around the title, Head Over Feet, where I was like, so they're going to, like, physically crash into each other, and maybe she's out jogging and he's rollerblading or something.
Yeah, I was sort of listening for themes related to the title in each of your descriptions and trying to be like, does this have a theme that matches with the title? Because I was like, that seems important that it should have that.
I realized for domestic thriller, you just need a woman in some regard in the title.
It's true.
A woman doing a thing. Yep.
Does it mention her, girl, lady, woman, she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, I'm so bad at titles. That's why I didn't even bother. Because, like, let me tell you, like, titles are not my skill.
Anna, do you want to say what the real titles were of the two that were real, in case people want to read them?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Also, I feel like one of the titles, though, might have, like, make you all pick it. But okay, so the first one is Amazon Woman Facing Fears, Chasing Dreams, and a Quest to Kayak the World's Largest River from Source to Sea. And then the other one is Shape of a Boy, Family Life Lessons in Far-Flung Places. And I was like, Shape of a Boy? What the frickin' heck does this have to do with traveling with kids?
That's a terrible title.
It's a terrible title.
Yeah, it sounds like a domestic thriller.
Yeah. Shape of a Boy.
Yeah, honestly, maybe that's the sort of title I should use for mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's get away from all the girl and woman and things and start doing boy.
Or just, you know, the non-binary ones.
Yeah.
Shape of a Child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do we have anything else we want to say about beach reads?
Read what you want.
Yeah, read what you want on the beach. It's a marketing term. You don't have to choose a particular kind of book to go to the beach. You can read whatever.
Oh, no. I just realized, like, what if someone listens to this episode hoping that they'll get recommendations for beach reads? I'm sorry.
I mean, we mentioned some real books.
So maybe you call it the, like, not a beach read episode or something. Like,
I guess we did say some books that could theoretically be beach reads. So yeah, okay. Hopefully they found that helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
You also don't have to go to a beach, you know. Like, it's okay. You can do your vacation somewhere else. Like, I would do my vacation if I could to Edinburgh and go sit in their cafes. That would be my vacation.
Heck yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider us giving us a positive rating and or review. If you've already done that, thank you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclubform.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclubform, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclubform. Our email address is bookclubform@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared in this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read, or request a book recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out at our website, bookclubform.com. No promises on reading your specific suggestions, but if you ask for a recommendation, we will give you one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, July 5th, when we'll be discussing the genre of humor nonfiction.
Then on Tuesday, July 19th, it's time for us to pitch our We All Read the Same Book books.
Hooray!
Hopefully you're a listener who's been around for a while and understands what in the world that all means.
Battle of the books.
We gotta do pitches. You gotta select them for us.
We each suggest a title that we will all read and discuss the one time a year we all read the same book. And then you, our listeners, get to vote on which one we read and discuss. Who scheduled this? Me. I scheduled this.
Megan seems a little too still to be real.
Oh my god. Ernie just unplugged my headphones. He's so rude. Yeah, I know, Google. My audio setup's causing echo.
You're sorry about that. I laughed a little aggressively there.
You know, it always makes me happy when something like this, when we record something that I know can be the outro.
Yeah.